So we also have a around the operation and funding testing. Please to indicate as well that the cluster CFR falls squarely within the high risk category. Because of the nature of the business, the transportation of people, transportation of dangerous goods, a lot of interfaces, the number of trains that they are running. So that is the elements that are built into our production model. So cluster CFR with this report into that category, including our tourism operators, so the transportation of people. Automatically makes the operator fall into the high risk category. Also, safety and management, this is in relation to revenue generation, but also in relation to the requirements, safety management is the requirement that we place upon operators when they apply for safety permits and the conditions that they are in. On the safety compliance and adequacy, our key priority there was to ensure that we undertake safety audit, it may be your safety management system audit, technical audit, and so inspection, current investigation, the railway technology, in relation to any technology or operational changes that have been brought into the industry by operators. The other side in terms of the Act helps to ensure that that technology applies with the so we've got a total life cycle management approach, right from design up to the commissioning of any new technology or any new labor. The evaluation of annual safety plan, this is really our evaluation tool, our monitoring and evaluation tool. Operators are expected to submit what we call an annual safety plan where they actually indicate their plan to improve safety in the various areas, whether it's personal safety, trains, issues around security, operational safety, improvement of infrastructure, and set the target, and we monitor it through the annual safety plan. And also, railway occurrence information. This is basically a tool that actually assist us to measure on a regular basis the number of occurrences of the railway and the data of those. Continuing the key priorities for 09-10, critical as well is the issue around the stakeholder partnership for safety. There's many players in this environment. I think can only be a group of this is in relation to the awareness campaign that we conduct in collaboration with key stakeholders. This includes the operators and these community organizations and so on. Our initiative through the National Railway Plan Conducting Forum, which is a stakeholder driven forum to look at issues around crime and security. Agreement with stakeholders to improve safety. This is the agreement that we enter into with the various key stakeholders to promote safety. But also critical, the promotion of safety and the promotion of safety in the region. And this is through the Southern African Railway Association to ensure that safety approaches, safety practices are common, there's a common approach to safety management within the region. Particularly in view of the fact that there's a lot of interfaces between the regional operators and Africa. There are operations, cross-border operations such as Botswana Railway, CFR, Swaziland Railway. The even is to ensure that our safety approach, safety management, adopted by those operators is similar to the one that is adopted in the country. support of key initiatives. These are initiatives such as your housing and education project, and help with battle the old state oversight of the dedicated cities and welcome services, and the review and assessment of the temporary programs by major on the institution, it's about really improving our fiscal effectiveness, and this is through ensuring sound financial management, sound revenue management. As you know, that currently 20% of our income is generated from the economy, and we need to ensure that we've got an adequate resources to manage everything. Good corporate governance, sound human capital management, risk management, we preach about risk to the operators, tell operators on a regular basis that they have to ensure that they've got adequate resources in place to manage things within their environment. And I think we need to lead by example as well. Optimal utilization of ICT. We need those tools to assist us with the things carrying out of our work. Just quickly, key performance highlights for 2009-10. With respect to safety audits, inspections, and authority investigations, this is really a quantitative picture, and I will get on to the bit of more detail at the later stage. We have conducted a total of 32 audits, 16 adult inspections, 23 authority investigations, and 43 technology reviews. And with technology reviews, as I said, we take a complete life cycle management approach to the introduction of new technologies within the river environment. I make an example of the signaling program that the class is dealing with. They had to submit their design model, which we had to accept and give a notice of control. Just to ensure that the safety requirements and our standards are complied with is right from the start. In relation to the target at the cluster tier standard level, audit focusing on infrastructure and equity, volunteer maintenance, communication infrastructure, and development, we conducted 27 targeted technical audits on cluster and 24 targeted. With respect to the directives and notices arriving from these audits, inspections, and current investigations, these are basically the directives as a result of the findings that we conduct our audits and we conduct our inspections. The outcome of that is in the form of the directives and the notices that we issue to the various operators. With regard to the safety audits that we conducted, we issued 3 condition targets. This is when there's immediate threat to base. So a vision directive would be if we realize that a specific line is not appropriate or fit for train run, we can prohibit services on that. So this depends on the nature of the finding, and whenever we pick up that there is an immediate threat to safety, then we will prohibit a portion of that activity. We issue 17 improvement directives. This is in the case where there's multiple threats to safety, for instance, infrastructure, but we will give an operator an opportunity then to fix the problem within thankfully, if not, then we can escalate it to a politician. We've issued 6-9 compliance notices when elements of safety management are implemented. 263 audit non-conformances. These are relatively minor but very important findings within an operator's safety management. We've undertaken 16 adult inspections, resulting in 7 improvements. conducted, I think, this for the first time in the institutional development of the we've conducted 23 of our investigations within one financial. This is the largest number of investigations that we have conducted. In 2009-10, we conducted 23, of which we issued 39 recommendations for the now, just briefly, what is it that we pick up as we conduct this project? We've just picked on just a key findings on both CASA, that is the natural rate of pollution, and I will start with the CASA audit, and this is really at a very high level. This doesn't really provide the actual detail, but just at a very high level, we realize that the CASA does indeed have a sound safety management structure that means in terms of the organizational structure, how we deal with the safety aspect, identifying risk, and so that the structure is very and the other side of our project with the preparation and the focus plan for the 2010 conference. We are of the view that if that can be replicated, I think there's a whole lot of learning opportunities for our community. And obviously, there is a bit in the cost element. I think Blackie will speak more about that. And we also picked up that there's a low system capacity, that is rolling stock and backlog or shorting, which leads to overcrowding of the state. And the increased demand in the system often leads to unsafe parking of the state. I know, for instance, particularly if you look at the media and so on, the major challenge is about capacity to carry the number and the pressure on that to deliver. Unfortunately, the challenge is that there isn't enough capacity, and that often leads to unsafe transition behavior, people hanging out the doors, the public passing rails legally, a whole lot of unsafe transition and the low system capacity. We are in a digital rolling stock infrastructure, particularly the signal which often leads to service disruption. And we know with service disruption, then there is the attendant commuter backlash. There's a whole range of issues that the bank has in terms of poor reliability of rolling stock. Second, vandalism. We know we raise this issue and we really want to emphasize it. And you will do in terms of the safety data that will be sent right at the end. You will know how triggered this problem is and it impacts on operations. Also, I think the importance to be done is significant testing on the housing infrastructure, that is the communication infrastructure. And despite these challenges, it has to be indicated that it is tough, despite these challenges. However, yes, our concern is in the reliability of radio is changed. That remains our concern. There is a fallback mechanism, which is the digitalization of cell phones, and this is an issue that we also look at. Also, with our audit, particular concern is the high number of radios in the infrastructure department. I think that remains a big concern, and it's an issue that we are addressing in CASA, and we requested them to basically provide us with a program on how they expect to we contemplate there isn't really a snapshot at a very high level. We contemplate this because if you focus on the polar model, we picked up that the problem is that this management is important. And that risk management is really not a problem. There's a tendency to look at the safety department or the risk management, and the only department that is responsible for safety. And it doesn't change to the we noted also high levels of manual payment authorization, which is a result of the equipment. The pay data is exceeding and there's a high level of manual payment. Now, that is the problem is exacerbated by the fact that we've got too many pay controls on the supposed we do that for the change control center in office where you actually have less than 50% of the change control center. So that is a major issue around signal failure. Failure requires a high level of vandalism and theft of equipment, and you will see on the safety data that we have gathered the nature and the extent of that problem, how it impacts on the operation. There are too many vacancies in the safety critical and safety related space, which in the long term, I think it would affect general relocation, but also safety. This is a big issue. And, I think there are both parts of the parties to address this. I can't wait to get in there. I think I spent much time on this one. Just an illustration of the challenge that I'm sure the numbers might have gone up. The challenge is that part of the there's huge investment. And we all get to that there's really for as long as we are faced with investment and mortality existing capacity challenges, we will never reach a point where we are satisfied with the safety of the operation. So this is a big issue, and I think it's an issue that needs to be seriously addressed. Temperson, with regard to the Falcon Rapid Rail project, this is the Minister Prata, this is Pani, and Sarabrata is the this actually indicates, I think, is the price that we pay. That's why this time is really important. With regard to the housing refugee project, as I indicated, in terms of our standard, we've got a total lifecycle management approach to new rail projects, right from design, construction, testing, and commission. And with Falcon, we follow the same rule. We actually are overseeing the project from a safety point of view. In the past year, we issued the construction paying the safety permit and testing commission. This is after assessing the risk. This is after assessing the construction safety permit application, and then satisfying ourselves that all the risks that have been identified in the attempt. We've done safety reviews on from the state control system and only stock. At the end of the financial year, we were busy with devaluation and and at the end of the financial year as well, we were looking at the safety management system, part of the Bombella concession company, with a view to issue a safety service, which we did achieve. We issued a safety service in May, and in fact, for that event, we used the format of the portfolio for the platform to issue that service. We've also developed a Alpha Drop, which identifies possible risks in the entire lifecycle of the project, which is monitored in the data on a regular basis. What we do is to insist that the risks identified, the mitigation steps, the correction steps, to fix, to deal with the risks that have been identified in the entire lifecycle. On 2010 World Cup readiness, we conducted a region-based audit, four region-based audits. We evaluated the transportation program, and we conducted eight audits on the program. And I think in this case, we have expressed, and I think the department, we've also indicated to the department in the past, about our impressions. 2010 World Cup readiness and how that was able to deliver on that from a safety point of view, but also from an operation. In relation to our regulatory framework, we have amended our standard regulatory management, which also I think the key issue that I want to indicate here is that we've changed the reporting requirements of the operators, the current reporting, because the requirement is that operators have to report on a daily basis in the event they need current environment. What we did, we realized, we picked up a number of shortcomings in terms of our standards, particularly when we generated the annual state of the report, that the categories that we had developed for historically, where although they were useful, but not useful to provide meaningful analysis of the data. So what we've done, we have expanded those categories so that we can be able to segment the variables. As you will see with the presentation of the safety data, we've actually changed the categories in order to be able to extract much more meaningful. Initially, we had collisions and derailments with one, but now we've changed that. The security or current categories as well, we've expanded on that. These are just examples. Related to human factors management standards, this is the standard that we are developing to come up with a common approach of life on how evidence and data critical rates in the regulation arise from training, testing, medical fitness, all of those aspects are covered. And I need to indicate also that this is a collaborative process that we do in conjunction, we undertake in conjunction with the operator. Prata also made financial contributions towards the development of this standard. Hopefully, we will be able to deliver on this standard before the end of the summer. This will then guide operators in relation to how to manage people in safety critical ways, such as train drivers and train controllers. We drafted the level crossing standard. Going through various processes, and we are currently consulting with the Department of Transport around that. We've also developed a risk assessment model for level crossing. This is basically a model that actually helps us to identify the different types of level crossing, but also the kind of requirements in terms of signage, in terms of protection levels, and so on, depending on the nature of the level crossing. Because this level crossing differs, others with high traffic volumes, others very low traffic volumes, others steep, topology, and so on. So obviously you have to adopt different protection measures in relation to those levels. We are testing that model and intending to feed into the standard that we have developed. We've also issued a guidance notice on the standardization of railway occurrence management. I think this is useful because we picked up that the undertake of current investigation that there are different approaches to how occurrences are managed by various occurrences. And I think it would be useful if we all, undertake this investigation from a common platform. If we say the identification of root causes, we need to know that what are the root causes of the accident, what is an immediate cause of the accident. Because most of the time, because of our capacity constraints, we are unable to investigate all the accidents. But however, we require operators to investigate all the accidents and submit reports to us. And those reports have to be tailored in such a way that there's a common approach across the board. So that's very important for us. Yes, on the enforcement side, Chairperson, we have finally published the penalty regulations. I think the Minister signed it off in the last month, and currently there's a public process. And we hope that before the beginning of the financial year, we will be able to implement the penalty system. And this was as a result of the amendment of our Act and the concerns that were raised about our enforcement capacity. So with the introduction of the penalty system, we hope that our enforcement capacity will be strengthened. And operators, yes, in cases where we can determine that there was a negligent behavior, we will be in a position to inform panel. We will revise the MC framework. This is basically the initial framework. The MC model was based on the processing of the MC for operators. Now the framework has changed. It takes into account the services that we provide to the operator, because conducting an audit is the service that we provide. Undertaking technology review is the service that we provide to the operator. So the service framework has changed, and I've noted that the CFO is here from SASA. She may as well expect that in the coming year, the service may be doubled. Because we've been providing these services to the industry, and I think at a very cheap rate. Also, we are confronted with the challenges of ensuring that we are in a position to sustain our services and transmission. The system is under pressure, and under the railway safety regulations, we need to come up with self-funding mechanisms in order to sustain. Then we've also developed a regulatory model for regulating small and low-risk operators. This is really to make sure that our resources are free to focus on the key high-risk operators. The challenge has been that the regulatory model contained within the Act, contained within our standards, assumes that all operators are the same, and it's quite intensive. Regulatory model. And in terms of how it guides our audit approaches, our safety management system requirements, The similar requirement would apply to a small siding as with plaster. And we feel that we need to free up those resources and focus on the big high risk offer. So we've developed that model. We are testing it now, and we want to make sure that at least our resources, limited as they are geared towards the big high risk offer. On stakeholder partnerships, I'll move very quickly. We conducted the safety awareness campaign, focusing mainly on level crossing hotspots where there's theft and vandalism of assets, and also just to conscientize the community that the railway assets are there, the community's assets, and it's very important that we emphasize that point. And the only way is through community outreach programs. And this we are doing in collaboration with the CFR, with PRASA, with the railway police, and the community organization, particularly the South African community organization. We've entered into agreements with the Chemical Industry Association. This is in relation to the transportation of dangerous things. We've entered into an MOU with the SATF. This is around the crime combating initiative between trains and stations. We're participating in the National Regulatory Crime Combating Forum, which addresses issues around crime and security in the railway environment. We've also played a major role in the development of regional safety standards. As we speak, the Southern African Railways Association is holding 9 adopted safety policy for the region. And recently, a handbook on the transportation of dangerous goods by rail was also approved by the Sara Board, but also adopted by the Sara Minister of Transport. So this has been a major success. On monitoring safety performance in the railway industry, we've got 2 major tools for doing this. One is the annual safety plan, which we evaluate and look at the measures that operators are putting in place to address all issues around operational safety, including security, and the various other safety concerns. We basically evaluated 320 annual safety improvement plan, and we revised the format for the 2008-09 state of safety report, which we recently tabled in Parliament. This was after the revision, as I indicated, of the safety management system standard. We broadened the reporting category to enable us to assist derive much more meaningful analysis. This is a useful monitoring tool. This is a tool that actually indicates to us what is the state of safety, where are the concerns, and what measures we need to take. I'm just quickly going to skip the budget, the CFO will speak to that. Now, we've gathered the data for safety performance for the financial year 2009-10. We have not yet published the report. This has to do with the timing of the gathering of information. Normally, operators submit this information at the end of the June-July period, and then we've got to undertake data verification and cleaning, and after the end of September, we're able to complete that exercise, and we do have preliminary data. And this data will be translated into an annual state of safety report, which will then be tabled to the column. This will be for the 2009-2010. This is just a snapshot on various local levels. If you look at the derailments and collisions, the graph there indicates a figure for all operators, which is in blue. Transnet is in purple. Metro Rail. photo of it from Holy to and that applies to both the TFR as well as the if you look at the actual breakdown, and this is the breakdown of pollution, the total chain on chain pollution, and I'm just going to focus on the two components of the data. The total chain on chain pollution was 10. And the collisions with the obstructions on the line, it may be a rock on the line, it may be anything on the line. And this is really a major problem because much as it may be looked at as a minor occurrence, however, the impact on service disruption and the efficiency of operations is major. So I think this is an issue that needs to be looked at. Chain on chain pollution, this is an area that we need to particularly focus on because of the magnitude of the impact. When chains collide, the impact is huge, the damage sensitive to the stock, but also to the infrastructure and risk. And the cost, if you were to look at the costs that are associated with chain on chain pollution, they are quite big. If you look at TFR, we only had one chain on chain collision and 709 collisions with obstructions. Further, in 09-10, two chain on chain collisions and 34 with obstructions. Derailment, I think this is a major concern, particularly with TFR. And you would note that in the recent weeks we had three major derailments in the Orland. We assume that the cost of those derailments in the Orland exceeds 100 million. So, and these are just direct costs. These are not indirect costs that are associated with service disruption. The major concern there, we experienced 123 running line derailments. That is on the active running line. So that's a major concern. Shunting yard line derailment for SATA, running line derailment line, and then shunting yard. If you look at the level crossing, the picture that is painted there, these are the incidences that have been reported. It doesn't indicate the number of injuries resulting from the incident or the fatalities resulting from the incident. We've experienced slight increases in level crossing incidences. And this is applicable to both TFR and TFR. Security related occurrences. If you look at the actual breakdown, you will see that the predominant occurrence category here is based on this, with a total of 583 occurrences reported, which constitutes 27% of the total security. The second highest is vandalism, 444 incidents, which was 2.3%. The third one is safety, 399 reported, which constitutes 20%. The theft of assets, 360 reported. Now, we go in the state of state to the detailed report, do a comparative analysis on a year of justice, and we'll be able to give an update. And in terms of the injury, that is in the security related category, you will note that there were
On the slide, I would like to present the budget that we have for the year budget under review. We, as a statutory aid public entity of the Department of Transport, we get a grant from the department and we can, the slide indicates an increase of 28.67%. That is attributable to the temp fee over and above the grant that we received annually from the Benefits Authority. In 2009, the other income that is on the slide was as part of donations that we received from related parties from DOT agencies, and the investment income is what we receive as interest from our positive cash balances in the bank. The second slide also indicates a graphical representation of what I have alluded to in the previous slide, indicating that 78% of our income comes from the department, and 20% is what we get from the safety permit fee, and 2% was the donations that I talked about. As I've indicated, we are not allowed to budget for a deficit. Basically, our budget is break-even, and what we budget for as income is equally distributed to our expenditure. Our staff costs increased by 5.26%. Our operating expenses increased by 0.3%, and admin expenses increased by 0.2%. And for the staff cost, the reason was the entity had a number of new appointments in the management cadre. On the operating expenses, it was the professional fees that are related to the inspectorate division of our entity to carry out the occurrence investigation and the audit that the CEO has alluded to earlier on. Unfortunately, we had reported a deficit of 1.493 million, and that is actually attributable to an overspending on the allocated budget. That is a graphical presentation of the cost. 60% of our budget goes to staff cost, 22% goes to admin expenses, and 18% is our operating expenses. Okay, the statement of our financial position. The RFR has got an asset base of 4.8 million, and that is made up of property, plant and equipment, and tangible assets, that is our software and the like. The current assets are made up of trade and other receivables that we were unable to recover at year end, and that remained a major concern and a problem. Our banking cash, we had a positive balance of 1.08. And our net assets indicate that our assets are more than our liabilities in the amount of 1.053. And our non-current liabilities are made up of finance lease liability, that is our use tax, and the like. And our trade and other payables, that was made up of the provisions that we had at year end in the form of accruals, and the short-term portion of the finance lease liability that is running for a period of 60 months, commencing February 2008. And that is just our medium-term budget for the outer 3 years. Okay, maybe I can, in conclusion, I can indicate that yes, we have received yet another unqualified audit report from the Auditor General, and we are quite satisfied that with the limited resources that we have, we are confident that we can proceed into the foreseeable future as a growing concern. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't know whether this is you must not stop on the conference because I see enough of what you are saying related to it. But I also think that it is proper to comment at this stage and say business was underlying this because if you present issues that are touching on transfer, you are presenting it because of your class. Instead of presenting it in a class and then you are presenting it in class, you know. But it is great to think of this person within a chance that the issue that needs to be addressed. And those issues are different from each other. Thank you very much.
good day to all of us. I was presenting on behalf of SAMHSA the state of the organization, and in the process I'll also be touching on provided largely by what contained in our annual report. Next to me is the interim chairperson of SAMHSA board, the company that will be going to I thought it helped to be dealing with some issues so that by the time we make the statement, people understood what terrain we navigated in. I think the simple concept here is that Africa is an island continent and the largest island on Earth, and therefore it informs the paradigm that guides our work on daily basis. It's a great matter for us that we are the sovereignty of Africa and all our markets to the north, far to the east, and far to the west. This is the legal mandate of SAMHSA, which is under the SAMHSA Act of 1998, which the bottom core demo objective, the first objective is the implementation of the Solar Convention, which is a state of rights. Including property, which is a vessel and offshore platform. And the second one is the protection of the marine environment. And in instance, the way it is compromised is to mobilize the combating exercise. And the last mandate there talks about the promotion of the Republic of Marine interest, the concept of getting into the government. What I call the Martin Luther 101, so that some systems remain in some consistency and vision, all that are well understood. Chairperson, South Africa made the definition of what is called the continental shelf state, which means we claim additional water as part of our national sovereignty. Currently, the land mass of South Africa is 1.2 million square kilometers. But the sea area has fallen down to 1.5 million square kilometers. Now, with the claim that we hope will be successful, we'll be claiming an additional 1.892 million square kilometers, which therefore, for us, the sums up, means that our area of operation is going to increase, the nation's obligations, and therefore the need to build capacity going forward. Now, comparing what then the outcome of this exercise would be, it will mean that the total sea land, as I call it, of North Africa, will be almost 3 times the size of the land mass. Where land mass is 1.2 million, will be on the sea side, which will be producing over 3.4 million square kilometers. There are implications related to that. The second issue is that insofar as search and rescue of our region is concerned, in the Southern Tip of Africa, we're the only credible search and rescue organization that has the capacity to allow ships to trade via the Cape. The reason being that it is a peace of mind that allows vessels to choose between the two ends and coming down south. And the various incidents have actually shown that the safer waters are, the better trade we start to attract, and therefore we become and retain our position as a major route. But what is maybe important here is to realize that the coastline of South Africa is 3,000 kilometers long, with 8 commercial ports and many, many fishing harbors along the coastline. We are surrounded by three oceans, the Indian, the Atlantic, and the Southern Ocean. Our sovereignty extends to the Mandarin Islands, which are over 2,000 kilometers to the Southern Ocean, which is southeast of where we're sitting now. And we have sovereign rights as part of a collaborative network of states in the Antarctica, which is over 4,000 kilometers. Now, we have got expeditions by South African from the mainland to the Antarctic annually, and from the mainland to the island. And therefore, we have to keep those lines of communication open all the time. the 30% of world food in terms of petrochemicals still go by the kids. The larger production of health. Maybe not get a similar incident of arising from such a vessel will present still have challenges for our country. But coming out of the recession, what we've started seeing now is the consolidation of the container trader. So that post recession, our assessment is that the container trade will follow suit and avoid the Suez and start coming around the Cape. And therefore, traffic is bound to increase, and therefore, incidents and opportunities for our nation. Just on contextualizing on the continental side, because that's where we play in the terms as well, providing continental leadership, is that the 39 states out of 54 in Africa are island or coastal states, and that's 72%. And South Africa is the largest exporter into Africa at 25% share of market. And that 25% of our export into Africa is actually carried on ships, largely. And Africa goes to 20% on the seaboard. So as our share of market increase, even under the current position, shipping becomes very important. I did indicate earlier that there are three mandates that we have with SAMHSA. One is the same for certain property of sea, and that level of property has to be ensured within this large careful area that we see on the street. It's halfway towards Australia to the east, halfway towards South America to the west, all the way down to Antarctica. And Antarctica has now become a lucrative tourism route. Large passenger vessels now intend going to Antarctica. The difficulty is there's no island between Cape Town and Antarctica. And South Africa has an opportunity to position ourselves as the hub for the Antarctic expedition of those tourists with the headaches that come with it. Okay. Another responsibility we acquired in 2009 in terms of the solar conversion on security, some pushback of the blue line around there. It has extended our responsibility beyond the 200 nuclear miles per kilometer outwards to sea. Under the regime of safety, coastal states have to set up security and surveillance and tracking systems that allow them to see ships from 1,800 kilometers away. And they have a compulsory reporting system to those countries. And it was 1,800 from the mainland and 1,800 from the Mandalay Islands. That gives us over 2,500 kilometers outward to sea on a certain stage, South Sea side. The mandate of prevention of pollution means that for us as SAMHSA, because the rights we enjoy in the sea on the international side outside our territorial waters, we enjoy them in reciprocation for that. The country has to display high levels of compliance to police the water so that they're then allowed to fish and have the mineral operation as part of your territory. So it's a tit for tat. The second issue that is of concern to us is that as much as we are doing the corrective and prevention of pollution of our water, in the instances of major pollution, we saw the Gulf of Mexico recently. In about 100 days, the US, they spent over $40 billion. That's on a cleanup of over 100 days, including incidental damages that occur. And we've got similar operations in Central Bay and other explorers in our own water. The last mandate in terms of promoting the Republic's maritime interest, we interpreted that mandate to be linked to the developmental objectives of our country, which are the issues of economic growth, the issues of creating conducive environment for investment, relating the full potential of the maritime industry, and the modernization of the shipping industry of our country, which currently out of the over 9,000 ships coming in and out of our port, only one is registered in South Africa. On the social side, we have as well creating a lot of maritime awareness, particularly so far as jobs and careers are concerned. We lead in the transformation of the maritime sector, and we've been making some inroads into the rural hinterland from our country, particularly when it comes to seafaring jobs, because when it comes to seafaring, the distances you're working in do not give an advantage over an urban person versus a rural one. All you do is train, you end up working on the international fleet, and that's how you obtain the job. The extent of the Colombian maritime economy that we have on, and for the industrial basis, for transportation basis, for the services that we were involved with. And lastly, was also just to look at the geostrategic and geoeconomic issues. And these issues, I must indicate, are not decisions that are taken locally. We are part of the International Maritime Organization that discusses the issue of ensuring that the sea lines of trade internationally are open at all material times. And as a result, Canada is part of the bilateral and multilateral government enters into, and we're also being required and looked upon as a center of excellence when it comes to maritime knowledge through our research that we have to conduct. Quickly on the strategic goals that we've been driving since 2008, the first one was to ensure excellence in the key mandates that we've been executing of maritime safety, of security as a new mandate, of marine health and environment. The second one, obviously, has spoken to the promotion of the industry, the aspect of transformation, particularly implementation of the BD Charter, as well as involvement of practice of the Atlantic continent into the sector. The third one is advancing those interests at national and international level. The fourth objective that we are driving is to deliver services via leveraging strategic partnerships. And the fifth one is the issue of reviewing the sample role and mandate from time to time in order to make sure that the things that we are within our scope of work. And number six, when we were here in 2008 to report to Parliament in May, we did report on many, many shortcomings that were in the NPP and we undertook to do a whole lot of work within the company around, and I'm proud to be reporting that today. And the seventh one, which has now expired, was the preparation for the World Cup. Because on the seaside, we were expecting passenger ships to come in as floating hotels, so we had to have plans around pollution prevention, around security, and also just around assisting in making sure that safe communication is assured all the time. I don't think that this will not be on your handout. It was just to say, when you have so many mandates as one entity, you need to have a way of organizing it. So the way we've gone about organizing our work at CANSA was to create the central for every mandate, key mandate that we have, because it's on time base, because it's on your network, because it's on navigation, and it's driven by different stations. And as a result, we have a center for the ship, which looks at the hardware and see, making sure it's appropriate. We've got the Center for Maritime Policy and Regulation, which interprets the international conventions and makes sure that we carry the influence within that. The Center for Maritime Excellence deals with research, innovation, knowledge management. And the Center for Maritime Industry Development deals with all policies that are related to the development and transformation of the maritime industry. We have also launched the Center for Stewards and Sports, which when we came before the portfolio committee in 2008, there was a challenge of a Chinese vessel that had not been accounted for fully, that was carrying weapons for Zimbabwe. Today we are proud to say no vessel within 1,800 kilometers of our coastline can move undetected because we've implemented the Center for Sea Water, the technology they require. And then the rest, the Center for Seafarers and Fishing, we launched that last week, Saturday in Devon. And the Center for Boating is our extension into the hinterlands of the country, the sea and waterways, where the 400 dams and 23 large rivers were implementing small vessel regulations. I'll come back to this issue of our performance. I just want to just quickly touch on a bit of history of where we were when we last came to report the portfolio committee, besides the workshop in March. But the last time we were here was in 2008. But in 2009, only the executive team had come here to the collapse of the first support of the staff. We came from 2008 to 2009, where we had a low budget level of 8 million revenue, which we have now succeeded to move all the way up to about 154 million by the end of 2009-2010. At the end of this year, we're expecting to collect about 250 million. What is important about this improvement in our financial position is that the share of government funding has shrunk to just on 10 to 11%, and most of our operations are now funded by the GP community. Just a snapshot in terms of our surpluses, we will find infrastructure. You will see that for a number of years, those slides that are in red, the last two columns on the right hand side, are showing that for two consecutive years there was a deficit budgeting, 140 million in 2007-2008 and 2008-2009. However, coming to 2009-10, we managed to shift from a negative 2.567 to a surplus of 52 million in 2009, and then the year that has ended with a surplus of 43 million in our book. The two other accounts that we are counting for a sample. One is called the Maritime Fund, because there is a Maritime Fund app, where sample is managing that on behalf of the Minister of Transport. It is a fund to be used in terms of maritime development. At the best of times, that fund has between 9 and 16 million dollars. And yet, the incidents we have on annual basis are far in excess of that money. In the year that we had out of two incidents, we had one that cost us 50 million, the other one that cost us 30 to 35 million. So we needed a top up, because we needed to get 44 million birds, and we only had 60 million birds in the maritime fund. But the Gulf of Mexico incident has indicated that major oil pollution, because one of the major trade routes in terms of oil, 50% of oil crude, means that the maritime funding needs to be structured in a manner that allows it to access funding and grant discussion with environmental affairs and treasury. What I'm saying is that the maritime funding is being looked into by the AD as questioning whether it's a going concern or not, because it's managed as a separate account from the main bank account. The last account that we have in the separate account is the welfare account. We were funded to the tune of $16 million by the World Bank to manage a project on their behalf on the east coast of the African continent, five mainland and the Indian Ocean islands. The objectives were two. One was to make sure that a park is created at sea, a highway is created at sea, as you can see there. That highway will be used by the oil tankers coming from the north going to the south in order to make sure that it is only heat obstacles and therefore pollute our water. And the second one was the effort recovery, should there be a major improvement. So that money is in November, it's been accounted for by SAMHSA as the first leader, and we are coming directly to the World Bank, and the auditors have developed a tool and are made to report. But on all three SAMHSA accounts, the main account, the American fund, and the World Bank account, we both have qualified for this in all instances. Just a passing comment on the capital base of the organization. When we appeared before the Social Committee in 2008, we were starting a lot with the funding of our own infrastructure. We had our data system, we had the station system that could not utilize in life, and since that time to date, we've been investing a lot of money. So that surplus that shows in our books of that 160 million, it is actually held in cash. And as soon as we roll out our investment in infrastructure, so that asset will actually shrink, but it will translate into actual infrastructure within the organization. And the other one obviously is the human capital investment in our people. The contract process we executed in 2009-2010, I'll quickly just touch on one was the turnaround and repositioning, which has its own aspect. And within those aspects, the key one was financial turnaround of the company. we are happy to report that we've managed to turn the company around. We've improved in the last 15 months our financial performance by over 300% in terms of our finances, from income of 8 million in 2008 to this 2010, where we managed to import 224 million. The issue of improvement of sales that we reported were in short supply. We are hosting our Center for Excellence at Tampa within this financial year. On the delivery of the World Bank, I think I'm fully to that bullet point. The expanded maritime search and rescue program has been implemented. We are now responsible for the entire coastline from south of Kenya all the way to south of Angola. And we implemented the satellite automatic identification system, which allows us to track all vessels on our coastline, including long-range tracking of ships on our base. On the issue of reforming the economic cluster, which was another undertaking we made when we appeared before the committee, so that we can approach government and industry with one voice. The initial government player part of the economic cluster has now been formed. We've got your DPI, we've got the DOT, we've got IDC, we've got the Justice Department, we've got all the major ministries that are involved in the sphere of maritime affairs. I think that the at the bottom of the very last slide is the issue of research that I was talking about, the mercantiles and job creation plan, wherein we commissioned a study by Deloitte. It's coming out by the end of this month, which will then become a document for the industry on how to keep people in maritime and how to create jobs as well. On the side of the highlight, we are happy and proud at SAMHSA that we were able to pull off a world first by doing something that I don't think in the next 10 years any nation will be able to match our performance in this regard, where we commissioned a deep sea vessel, the SEA Ballast, and mobilized an all union crew from different companies to move the vessel on their own from Cape Town to Devon as part of the Year of the Future and at the same time to showcase how far we've come in the media. And that's what I was thinking by the crew of the vessel and some of us have been passing on board in further places. I think the yeah, no, the commander there says holders can check the looking over there, that's sure. Yeah. I think the other thing that we should not underestimate about this is that what we did when the vessel left Cape Town, the task crews that moved the guided the vessel out of the harbour were all operated by women. The marine pilot was a woman. And the crew of the Adalas got it into Port Elizabeth. Wherein the pilot moving the vessel in was a female, and the pilot driving it out to Devon. The whole shift of people who handle the vessel from a vessel safety services perspective were all women. And then when you got into Devon, because in all categories of maritime, we've been working very hard over the past 10 to 15 years. Devon as well, could mobilize its own pilots, its own crews, its own personnel, all female receiving and all female navigated vessels. And to the extent that we were able to do this, these pictures, some of them are pulled out of the international media, because I think we managed to showcase what South Africa can do in leading in this paradigm of the male dominated industry, that women can actually do it. And in this system, we mobilize them for all the services in their port and on the vessel and their travel. And the age profile of these ladies, I mean, they are mostly almost 98% under 30. They come from rural areas, because in 2005 we ran some awareness campaigns in the hinterlands of the Eastern Cape, and many of them come from villages and from pages, from as far as the city, this is speak to them individually. I think that these mankind jobs have changed their lives, they look after their families as well. And many of them from single parents, a whole lot of other issues that I think we need to look deeper into that paradigm. of using maritime norms, because you don't need either to become a teacher. You need good education and go and work out with it. Also, part of highlights I mentioned that we put an all-women human crew for the welfare, which we're proud of it. We've been rolling out the maritime awareness campaign, targeting largely the rural hinterlands of KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape, and we think we succeeded. Before the end of this year, we are going to roll out into the Northern Cape, and in 2011, we're going to focus on the hinterlands. Our highlights were very proud of our achievements of over 300% financial turnaround in this short period of time. The issue of receiving unqualified audit for 2 years running is very important in SAMHSA. Because when the new team was appointed to SAMHSA in 2008, there was a disclaimer on the table where the AC had told the book at hand. And we had to work very, very hard to turn our situation around. We have also launched the 3 centers that are dedicated, and these centers are well equipped and are operating as we speak today. As for this issue of the digital audits, I'll come back to it. I've spoken about the maritime clustering of our services, and the last 2 points are very important to have because we are going to make a request. One is the stabilization of the SAMHSA board. As a member of the portfolio committee, we've been here long, longer than the SAMHSA, and all of us know that this is one thing that is desirable for SAMHSA, the stabilization of governance within the entity. And we're happy to say that even the level of empathy has related back to this issue of the board that was unable to convene and therefore to approve the budget or to approve the corporate tax. And then the AD gave us letters of empathy in the last financial audit. But the way we have now, we've managed to turn all that around. On the low life side, I'm very glad to report that we lost a female SC on the 24th of June this year, Ms. Akona Jeveva, it was in the media, who died at sea off the Croatian coastline. That investigation is ongoing. SAMHSA is working with the family, working with the police, working with the DECO in order to bring this matter to fruition. We are working with the UK as well and Singapore to get to the bottom of what could have happened on board that country. The second low life is the continuous loss of life and injuries. If you go to our annual report and you look at the casualty page, you begin to see that the loss of life are spread out throughout the city community. The small vessels, fishing in particular, is highly exposed to this kind of fishing, and we are intervening by forming the Center for Sea and Fisheries. And the third bullet point is one that we've raised before with the portfolio committee. The slow ratification of international conventions has made our industry highly uncompetitive, and we can't get to make a request for the first question of maritime education. The fourth point relates to the progressive investigation that was conducted by JPMG Council in 2008-2009, which led to the collapse of the SAMHSA board, affecting the morale and the progress of the entity. We deem that as a very serious low life in the organization. The conclusion of that matter is even more sad than the matter itself, where he includes the appointment of the new chairperson and the deputy chairperson to look into the matter, and I'm sure when we come to the conclusion of our presentation, we will then report to the portfolio committee that the board has reached a conclusion, having considered all the circumstances that led to the forensic investigation, that the investigation was most unfortunate and well and ill-advised as well. The last bullet point relates to almost like an anti-statement to what I said earlier, that we have stabilized our board. The chairperson and the deputy in time expired at the end of this month, and we were a bit worried as to whether the appointment of the new board will be done timely so that there's no disruption to our operation. In conclusion, chairperson and members of the committee, would like to thank the members of the Postcolic on Transport, on Transport, and inviting us early in the year also to the workshop, at which we have seen a lot of ideas that we have used as one day we can see. We insisted on the rural development strategy in maritime, and we are happy to report that we've taken those points on board. And secondly, that the Transport Committee is proposing higher standards in corporate governance and service delivery, and that we are going ahead in making sure that the maritime becomes the new code path. In concluding, we want our recommendations, but I'm just going back to that one side. Our recommendations that we want to share with the portfolio committee is that to assist in accelerating the process of appointing the permanent board of Transport, and secondly, to support the initiative to develop an African, South African and African American agenda that should create a new developmental path for our economy. And the third one being the ratification of the domestic and international, in particular, the fact that we hosted the African Maritime Conference in October of last year, and yet we are still behind in ratifying the standards that were adopted in South Africa with South Africa. And the other point that we request is that maritime holds a lot of potential for the country. And we think that in the thinking of all the things that we do, we need to start looking at the maritime economy as the platform that we can use to address the issues of poverty and level of jobs in the country. I've spoken about the request to fast-track maritime education, as the international one, because we are still violation of the international maritime fund for not the education. The other one is to restructure and recapitalize the maritime fund, which tries to think with 50 million and yet the incident and our exposure by the that money. And for it also to support our effort to penetrate the rural hinterland of our country by providing additional training and development infrastructure. In 2011, we are happy to announce that in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, we are starting a network of maritime high schools offering maritime studies. And the maritime courses have been expanded at universities. But where we need the support is that has come to the end of its useful life in 2012 when it's retained. And something is making a bid to keep the dollars as a trading asset, so that we cannot say that we don't have data on which to trade as it is, but we keep our data to the government data fully depreciated, and selling it, I think, will not be very wise to do. So we are bidding for the acquisition of the data to the trading data for South Africa. Some parts, thanks to all, there was a long list of things that spoke to them, but I was just saying, which I'm sure will do the Q&A. Members may want to come back to which is the initial piece and what we think around each one of them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. I tend to be corrected. I think only your highlights, especially around the female commanded vessel. Is it true that South Africa has the first and the only female harbor master in the world?
Yes.
I think it's right about that one.
Yes, and also the female pilot, which was the first female pilot in France already in 2000. Now that was a driven by women in the harbor, so the majority there. In the pipeline of our seafarers, the most of the seafarers that see today are women. Safe to say that our numbers are too low. We only have 1,800 registered seafarers in the country, less than 1,000 of them being active. And yet, there's a shortage of 250,000 seafarers at sea. So there's a bit of an opportunity that I think we can use as a nation. I didn't mention the numbers here, but I think in answering your question. Thank you very much. The shortage of seafarers is 34,000 officers and 220,000 and that was before the recession in 2008. He expected that when we come out of the recession, for the peak of over 9,000 workers in our country, the numbers will actually go in excess of 20,000. Where is there in lies the opportunity? Because you don't need to make a to train teachers. You need a good schooling system, a financial training on board, and then you have sports. That was one more short comment. Our 220,000 people are coming in out of our port, hence in our cargo, that's what we're looking for. And only have 1,000 of that is 220,000. There is something that's not balanced in the number. And that's how we need to do it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity. Let me thank the chair and the honorable members for the opportunity to present the annual report of the passenger rail in South Africa. Chair, I'm told that we other institutes have given 30 minutes as far as we can go. Another note I get from honorable debater. So I move until such time that the resolution will move. Okay, I think we have a full team here, of course, leading our delegation is the chair of the board, Mr. Steve Kennedy, myself, the CEO, the CFO, Cindy Koyana, other executives, Peter Holene, Jonathan Kabusinga, Nana Zemani, Chris van der Waals, they're all here to, they're part of the team in the presentation and we can answer the questions. Chairperson, I think the end of the 2009-10 financial year was a very difficult, was rather a very significant moment for Prasa. I think in a way it constituted the end. We're coming to an end of the mandate that we were given by government in 2007. And as you can see, the mandate changed us to repeat, to refresh, I think, ourselves. What we've been asked to do, we're not asked to make money. We were asked to do three specific things by government at that time. Especially that we need to arrest the decline in commuter rail services. I think there was a difficult situation prior to 2006. Secondly, that we must consolidate all passenger entities, and thirdly, that we must prepare rates for 2010. That's what we were asked to do by government for the period 1st April 2007 until 31st March 2010. And that's what we'll be reporting on, how far we've moved in implementing that particular mandate. Yes, there's no doubt that people, the other entities mentioned the difficult economic conditions, the recession. And I think that in our own environment, we've seen that in the form of job losses in the economy. We've seen increased energy costs, we've seen increased labor costs, and of course, all of those impact on both our patronage and revenue numbers. When people lose their jobs in the economy, particularly in the manufacturing sector, and the retail sector, and the mining, in the mining sector, we see that in the numbers of the for people who use trains as well as our income. But yeah, despite all those difficult and operating conditions, I think that the Prata managed to record some important successes, and I'll highlight some of those. I think we were able to get the stabilization of commuter rail on cost. We were able to conclude the transfer of AutoPEX and social order made from Transnet into Praka. We were able to, of course, position the Praka brand locally and internationally. Of course, Praka was only formed in March last year, it was publicly launched at that time. But of course, all of us talk about Praka today. As an established entity. On the performance side, we've been able to increase the value of assets by 87% from 11.6 billion rand to 15.9. And these are historical values, say it's not market values. I think that when you recently put our insurance program, I think that the value of the assets, the replacement value, is in order of 60 billion rand, and of course the market value would be 5 to 8 times more than what we've got here. So I think that is one major issue that we have. Of course, the problem we see, like with the other entities, particularly the REF, that you may have all these assets, but if they don't generate the cash, that becomes a major issue, which I think will influence the way we proceed in the future. We've increased the income by 34% from 4.2 billion rand to 5.6 billion rand. And of course, say that like some of the entities, sister companies, we also had an unqualified audit for this fifth competitive year. I think you mentioned, say, that you had a discussion with the office of the AG and the committee. We are also having discussions that even though we get an unqualified audit, some of us were deeply unhappy with even how the audits were conducted this particular year. And I think that they were meant to meet with the Auditor General yesterday, but today, and due to the work of the committee in Parliament, we postponed that discussion. But I think that this is a reservation that we want to raise very strongly, because we think, Chair, that state-owned enterprises, particularly the private executives, we demand to be treated with fairness. That when you get an unqualified audit, or even when you get a qualification or disclaimer, it must be on the basis of audit evidence, not on other side issues that have nothing to do with our audit. And I think that I felt very strongly that we were subjected to some of those issues in this current audit. So yes, we got an unqualified audit, and I believe that we deserve it as an entity. But the type of things and the process that we've gone through, I'm not satisfied, and I've raised the ages of the directive, that I think that it's things like this that we're not going to support. Yes, we respect the Auditor General's office, its independence, that it must do, that why its role is enshrined in the Constitution, and the state entity will respect that. But we saw things that have nothing to do with some conclusion that has nothing to do with audit, and that were not informed by the kind of audit evidence that was generated during the audit process itself. So on the service delivery side, we want to report that we were able to build 3 new stations, completely new modern stations, Rosefield, Moses Mabhida, and Central City stations. These were stations that were new, that were not there, that we built. We're able to, in that year, complete the upgrade of 50 more stations around the country, and these were upgrades of major stations such as Nazareth, Cape Town, Orlando, Lawrencefontein, Durban, RIPIC, and many others. We have a program here called the Patient Improvement Program. This patient is aimed at just improving things like toilet, light, fencing, painting, all of those. We spend on average about $1 million for those visible improvements. And I think that the last financial year we managed to do 111 such stations so that the passengers would feel that these are stations that we're able to do. We're able to upgrade 505 coaches for commuter railways. Our target here, of course, as part of the strategy from the 1st of April 2007 till March, government has said that we need to refurbish 2,000 coaches. And after we've done that 505, we're able to meet our target of 2,000 coaches that were mainly out of service, that were not working, that were fixed and brought back into service. And we've been able to increase the number of trains, reduce overcrowding, and make sure that there's more trains that are running than it was about 3-4 years ago. And of course, we were a major player in the 2009 Confederation Cup. I know that we talk about 2010, but there was a Confederation Cup in 2009. And Prata, particularly Metro Rail, was a key player in that particular competition. Passenger trips, on the service delivery issues here. As you can see, that Metro Rail died 644 million passenger trips. Short-term schedules are made 2.9 million. And auto tax, of course, 2.4 million. On the safety side, the accident rate in Metro Rail, I think that we've reduced that by 14%. And that is a result, of course, of what the CEO of the Rail Safety Regulator said, Mr. Murphy. And I was only disappointed in the fact that he didn't also say that all the directives they've issued against PRASA are going to be withdrawn in the light of that improvement. But hopefully, I think that we'll be able to find each other and be able to do that. The injury rate, that is the employees, we measure the injury to employees. I think, Chair, that is one of the major things in our operation. And you can see that we've been putting a lot of effort because it has kept on going down as we report in the annual report. The Chair, of course, I think that we've seen that the revenue for social media made and autopay have increased despite the fact that the patronage numbers have gone down. Our BE spending of 77.2%, I think that if you look at the 1.2 billion rand that we spend on some of our key projects, we target BE about 963 million was spent directly to black-owned companies, women-owned companies, and I think even our board, even though it says that is a high percentage, but they said to us, you need to do more because we think that it is still based on the 26% BE representation. So it's something that they've asked us to improve. And we've done a lot of learnerships on the security, technical, and driver areas, over 1,000, and of course our target was far below that, and I think that it's something that has helped us in the security side. Just to quickly deal with the World Cup, because I think that is the moment that at Prata family was done, we think that we've done extremely well, and it's something that we think that we need to continue, because we, on that line there are many important lessons that we can draw, but we set ourselves very clear objectives. So of course, firstly, like all state-owned enterprises around the state-owned entities, we wanted to contribute to the success of the World Cup first and foremost. Secondly, we wanted to position rail and other public transport products that we offer, so that many people start to become aware of what we offer, what are the services that Prata is to offer. And of course, that we wanted to use the strength of rail, because when it comes to moving massive numbers of people, rail remains unrivaled as a mass move of people. If you want to move 40,000 people, 60,000 people, you can't use the bus or the taxi. Rail is a solution for that. If you've got a game in Soccer City, the 60,000 people, you want to clear them within the first hour or first 2 hours, rail is a solution. You can't put taxi, you have to put a train for that. And assuming, of course, that it is working efficiently and with proper maintenance as well. And of course, we wanted to reward our loyal customers, because they are, people who have always used trains for many years. They do so daily, We felt that during the World Cup, we needed to give them an opportunity to be able to go to the game as part of our reward for them and recognition of their support towards them. And if you look specifically as part of the program that I mentioned, what we've done here, I think that 120 sets were upgraded specifically for the World Cup. 65 of those, of course, were specifically the trains that were scheduled during that period. And I think I've spoken about the 50 stations, the platform improvement, platform height, to close the gap between, if you look at stations like Crown Station, Rainbow Station, the station here in Newlands in Cape Town, we implemented program interventions that the gap between the platform and the train is closed. And I think that is something that we want to carry forward so that we don't have all of those things. We have also access control, speed gate, more specifically, the new technology that was introduced on stations that are supporting the World Cup. We've had the information and monitoring systems that were there, including the information boards that we've also installed. So I think that the public address is in most of the stations, the help points that we set up, the information board that spoke about, and of course we introduced the bulk SMS system where we were sending information and messages about train performance to the passengers to say your train is late, your train is on time, and all of those issues. So you can see in terms of on the race side, if you look at the performance of race, the fans that were going to the game, all in all 1.4 million passengers used trains specifically to go to the game. And you can see that the Western Cape performed enormously well. And that was the reason for that was because of the way the stadium, together with what we call the viewing point, were located. It helped quite a lot, and in the way which the public transport was planned for the World Cup. And of course, I think that we did the same also in Gauteng, but we felt that in Gauteng we should have actually exceeded the performance because most of the games were located there, but the efficiencies were not as great as it is. So 1.4 million fans, over and above what we transport every day, and used our service, our race service more specifically, and we think that is something that was quite significant. These are examples here that speak for themselves. This is not a drawing. As you can see here, this is our station during the World Cup around the country. That's our station. These are the people who came, used our station, and we offered them convenient, clean trains, as well as safe trains. And I think here that and we're putting all over our business, we're putting this, and these are local and international fans who are using, and I think that we've got many, as you can see there, probably long-lasting relationships, but also strengthened by race in that process. I'm talking about the social media and this. And there, you can see, here the train in Pretoria, the Dutch fans when they were going to the final. They shattered our full train, and they put in the numbers there, and the Spaniards did the same on some of the corridors, and then you can see that this train was branded orange inside because it was an amazing thing. And of course, you can see that this is parking, where people were bringing their cars, park at our station or in our building, and then use the train to those trains. Okay, I think that is our performance. I want to emphasize, we didn't draw those honorable manulators. These are pictures taken not only by our own people, but also from the journalists who travel in Devon, in Cape Town, in Gauteng to say this is a performance of race. And we hope that we'll be able to learn the lessons from there and also build on some of the successes. I've seen, of course, say that during the Chiefs Pirate game, that some of our own people forget some of the lessons that they just learned about them, and we're trying to put that there. So that is a challenge. That yes, we performed well, but are you able to maintain the momentum? And it doesn't automatically. It's a management issue to make sure that you keep on pushing the line and making sure that people come to that. Okay, more specifically on the audit, I think that the number of issues that I think the committee, as part of us being accountable, we need to talk about the two specific issues that were raised. In our annual report, the first one was the going concern issue. I think that the Auditor General spoke about just over 1.2 billion rand as a loss and Chair wanted to break that down and explain what it is. The first one says that when we talk about the actual loss, that our business suffered is only 281, and that was mainly between Autotech suffering 106 million loss, and Intersight suffering about 70 million rand. So it's 281 million rand that we talk about, and that was an actual loss. But the billion rand was not a loss, it was a funding shortfall, meaning it was money that was never given to Prasa. I think that before the start of the 2009-10 financial year, we did present to government, when we took over social media mail and other things, that we were going to require that amount of money, and we didn't get it. I think that it's not money that we lost, the funding shortfall of the billion rand that we had, and we wanted to put that on record so that we don't talk about that draft has lost is 1.2 billion rand. It's a billion rand funding shortfall and 281 million loss as it was. Of course, we've got in that loss a depreciation is a non-cash item. You can see that we got about 250 million in the last financial year. Depreciation was about 738 million rand. And it moved over the last time, at the end of the financial year, to 1.2 just over a billion. And you can see the difference is 250 million rand. But that is not actual cash. It's a book entry in line with the accounting exercises that is there. We've got fixed loss expenditure of 3.7. I'll explain it a bit later. I've got a slide specifically dedicated to that. But here, let me deal with the funding shortfall as to where it is. The main contributor, of course, to that was Socialism Mail. We inherited Socialism Mail last year after we've done the due diligence. In fact, this was the second due diligence report of study that we did. The first one we did for all entities that have been transferred from Transnet into Prasa, and then the second one was done specifically just before we transferred the Socialism. It showed that we need about 1.4 between 1.2 and 1.4 billion to run Socialism Mail. It was transferred to us, but we were only given when it was transferred, we were given 5,500 million rand out of that 5 billion, out of that 1.5 billion, 1.4 billion rand, and that number decreased to 450 in the last financial year, and in this year it's gone down to 424. And there's no funding for social laws that are moving beyond 2010. So the 424 is the final amount that we've got in the book. Until the new budget is finalized, it's reflected, but there's no any allocation that we have. Of course, I must comment that Social Rosa main operations were able to generate 492 million rand in fair revenue, which was very good. So in real terms, we needed almost a billion rand for Social Rosa, which we didn't receive. And hopefully, as we move forward, there will be an understanding that everywhere, rail operations, when you talk about public transport, your rail operations are subsidized everywhere. You will never find, or else if you have to recover the cost of rail from the passenger, because of the cost of rail infrastructure, it won't be affordable at all for people to do that. So I think that's one of the major issues that is there. And here, of course, we still carry a liability. When we transfer, especially natural rail, and later, Social Rosa and Autopack into Prasa. We are not just taking people, we are taking people who come up with obligations, and more specifically, the retirement, the medical aid, the payroll, and other employer contributions, and they run into millions of rand, and they impact in our personnel costs as a business. And when you analyze our annual report, you'll see that our personnel cost increases quite significantly. And a lot of people, when they look at the numbers, when they see personnel costs, they come and say, you have employed more people, these are salaries, you're paying more people. It is not, personnel costs include not only the salaries of people, but including the retirement, the medical, the statutory contribution, UIF, and all of those things. So currently, we are an organization of about 15,000 people. mainly 10,000 of those are in the rail operations, and the rest are spread between our property as well as our bus operations. And of course, over and above the unfunded mandate that we have to carry, we have to incur a lot of additional costs that are not funded. The first one being the increase in electricity tariff, because our trains rely on electricity for traction energy, not primarily for optics. And you can see that the 3% increase in 2009 meant that Plaza actually had to pay that over 100 million rand in electricity bill that they didn't have. We planned a fair increase of 10%, which would have given us an additional 184 million rand, but again, that was not there. That was not. I think the CFO is not with me. The equipment. I thought he's somewhere else, my apologies. I'm not sure if for the interest of members we should proceed or want to have it on there. We should proceed while they're fixing the same government. So, Chair, we had a 10% plan in our budget. The 10% increase in fare revenue that was planned, that was meant to be introduced in April 2009, but of course that was not granted at that time, so it meant therefore that we couldn't meet our budget of an additional 134 million. We had 210 million that was allocated to us as part of the 2010 from the Public Transport Infrastructure Fund. We committed that money, but that money from government. But it ended up not coming, but we spend the money on the infrastructure already. So that contributes to that. So if you look at what we call the loss business by business, you'll see that the shortfall is for social and main and metro rate, and of course the autopex portfolio as well as enterprise, those constitute the actual losses that we're talking about in the numbers that they are. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we know here that it is not something that in the PFNA it is allowed. Of course, like the road accident fund, we have, of course, a major problem. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure is for 3.7 million, and the breakdown here in the slide that I have, you'll see that in all items is about Elcom, but the largest item is fair growth. Now, let me explain that properly, Chair. Fair growth is that before Somerset West here, we had a facility where we were leasing a facility where we were maintaining our trains, what we call the 8M trains, the silver trains that run between Cape Town and Kailicha. The owner of that land decided that he was going to sell the land, and of course we have made a lot of investment. So that we don't lose that investment, we decided that we should acquire the property. Make an offer, even though we didn't budget for that, we didn't know about it, but we felt that losing the kind of investment we've made on that asset, it would have been quite irresponsible of us. So we decided to go and buy this asset. We got the necessary approval from the board. We also applied for approval from the Minister of Transport in terms of Section 54 of the PFMA, and of course I think that as we did that, the owner was keen to conclude this, and every time when there was a delay in all those approvals as well as in the cash availability, interest was charged onto that property. But ultimately, we managed to pay that. Yes, it's not justice, it's not something that we can justify, but I think that the huge risk was us not having the trains running on the Cape Town Kailicha line, the silver trains, because that was something that we couldn't. So we did measure and say that even though it was not budgeted for in our capital program, we should buy that facility so that we own it, because the trains that are being fixed there is actually the last train that we ever bought in the country. That was in 1986, and these trains were bought produced by the Japanese. The performance is good. They were initially bought for housing, but they ended up in the Cape for political reasons, because when Kailicha was established and people were being forcefully moved there, one of the key things, decisions that was made was that we were going to give you trains. And those trains that we got were then brought in Cape Town. So those are the trains that the running chain. So the Khayelitsha, the central line, Khayelitsha, Michelle Spain, PDP to Cape Town, is one of the busiest lines that we have. And I think, Chair, that we are not justifying the interest. If we had the approvals on time and we had the cash immediately, we wouldn't have incurred that loss. But that is basically the explanation behind that. And of course, the others are ECOM. Chair, we're trying to do everything to resolve issues because we've got ECOM and municipality who provide electricity to our substations. And of course, when they bill us, at times when there's very serious disputes about the accounts and everything, initially we said to me as a way of trying to mitigate that issue that we pay upfront. But we also realize that there's another risk. If we pay upfront, we are not going to get that money credited to us or even being paid back to us on time. So if you are not paying within 30 days, of course, that the municipalities and the economy do impose the kind of thing. The same story that the road agent explained with the attendees, that if you don't pay once an award has been made, you're going to pay interest in that respect. So it is not, we don't think that it's something that we think that we should be allowed to manage with ESCOM and the municipality to enter into better agreements where we don't incur the penalties. And I think in most of them, like in Johannesburg, we had already learned from the lessons in the previous financial year. We did enter into agreement to mitigate against something, against those type of losses. So the main issue, of course, that underpins what the Auditor General has said earlier is the going concern issue. It relates to what we have done as far as in line with the mandate. Well, government gave us a mandate to do the three things that you mentioned. And as part of that was that we needed to invest in infrastructure, we needed to upgrade the rolling stock, and we needed to run the operations. The truth is that government didn't give us the full amount. When there's a government funding shortfall of $1 billion, that money must come from somewhere. And unfortunately, if you analyze our financial statements over the past 3 years, PRASA didn't cut. We had two options. One option was that we cut the services of social order made altogether and not run the services. We chose not to do that. We used the reserves that we had in the company to pay for that. So the funding shortfall in operations as well as in capital, PRASA used its own reserve to finance those shortfalls. And you can see that over the past 2.5 years, we spent about 1.5 billion rand to pay for the gap in operational funding that we had. Now, it is a good thing, Chair, because PRASA is not a profit-making business. It's there to deliver that we run those services. But there is, of course, there is the other side of it. And I think, Chair, is that it starts to weaken your balance sheet. When you spend your own reserves, you deplete your own reserves, you don't have those cash reserves in there in the business, then you start to have a problem. And that's where we find ourselves, that we have we've done the 2010 work, we've upgraded the infrastructure, we've upgraded the train, we've paid for social aid, but we're left with a weak balance sheet, we're left with a weak cash position as a business. And I think that is at the heart of it. And I think that the Office of the Auditor General, even though the Office of the Auditor General raised the red flag, but I think that it's acknowledged that based on all our cash projections, income, and the subsidy, everything, that PRASA remains, of course, the going concern. And secondly, of course, that we now look at the special arrangements, settlement patterns in South Africa. We don't believe that we are going to one day reach a point, anytime soon, where government is going to cut the subsidy, particularly for early services. Because if you do that, if you cut those subsidies, particularly for rail operations, it means the burden of transport is going to be placed on poor communities who need to travel. So, I think that's what we have. We've used our reserve to finance the shortfall of government funding, but the result is that even if we've got the change, we've got a weak balance sheet and weak liquidity, we're in a weak liquidity situation. That's the thing. And of course, course, there are implications for the weak financial position. If you've got a weak balance sheet, you don't have the cash to meet your obligations, and the four things that we think are going to happen. The first one is that PRASA has embarked on a program to expand its capacity. Mosengwa spoke about the need to increase capacity. So I know that a lot of people in the media, when I read, read articles all the time about performance of rail, every time we've got train delays, we've got problems, they attribute it to poor management, that the management is not doing its job. So I think that we need to have perspective as a country, not even as a portfolio committee as a company. The truth is that the assets we use to run trains today have come to an end, the system has become so obsolete that the level of reliability of the trains, of the signaling system, is gone. Even if say I were to be tied to a tree, shambled, there will never be 100%, 96% as we see in most advanced countries. These trains have reached a point where we have to scrap them. The truth is that we are entering a new phase of investment in railway, so that we can have a new system, new technology that responds to the challenges of the time. We are keeping the system running. And the more we delay getting new rolling stock, new signaling system, the more the cost of running the system goes up, and the more the levels of reliability of these corporations, I think, that will come. And that's what we have. So the capacity issue. It is not us. In fact, if you analyze how we have run the train, other than social development, you see that on the metro rail side, we push the on-time performance. That in some of our regions, like KZN, if you look in the past 6 months, our performance has been at around 92% on-time performance. But of course, the 8%, there are problems that we experience during the critical peak, which means more people are affected by that. But when you read again in the past week or listen to radio, it's like trains are always late 100% of the time. And it's something that we must have, we must deal with it correctly and analyze the trend. At what point? Critical peak, yes, we've got problems. The metro rail system in the world, the metro system carries 60 to 80,000 people in one direction. Our metro system has lost that kind of capacity that when it carries 20,000 people in a morning trip, we've got the kind of difficulty. So you are not going to solve that problem. Even if tomorrow you say, Montana, you're not doing a good job, you keep the system. You are not going to achieve that issue. So it's a capacity issue. And I think that's what we need to address as a country and say, what kind of investment? Who should be paying for that? And of course, when PRASA is in a weak financial position, it will not be in a position to go to the market. Because if today we were to go to the bank and say, we want new trains, can you pay for that? I'll tell you that none of our projects would be bankable from when we look at our assets, we look at our cash position, and all of those things. So it means it has to be a completely different arrangement. And I think other people will say, build those assets and everything, but you can't postpone for 5 years. And I want to put it publicly here, that if this country doesn't have the first new trains in 2013-2014, we're in serious trouble. So let me put it again, because I know that, like in ESCOM, when there are problems about capacity, run out of electricity, it's so easy to blame management and say they're not doing the work. I've been saying the same story for the past 3 years since I joined this company. But I think that we're now entering a critical phase. If in 2013-2014 new trains do not enter the system, this system will run the risk that it will shrink quite tremendously, and we're going to exclude a lot of people from participating in our own economy. And I think that government, parliament, needs to consider this very seriously. That we as PRASA have done the program, have developed the business case. And I know that we are working with National Treasury, Department of Transport, Department of Trade and Industry on that issue. And I do not doubt that there is commitment. But we cannot allow postpone this program. We have now reached a point where the country has to buy new trains. Has to buy new trains. These are trains that are light, that are efficient, that are energy efficient, and that will be able to ensure that on the safety side, they achieve the kind of goals that are there. So today, I'm raising this issue as a red flag. We've got to buy new trains. 3 years ago, I said we we can run the program over a 3-year program, over a 3-year period. But now we are running, the period is becoming shorter and shorter. A third of the current fleet we have to take out of service in 2013-2014. So what we'll do effectively, we would have spent 25 billion on to upgrade the system, but in 3 years we actually have lost the benefits of that because we didn't build on it in a more strategic fashion. And I think that's the single most important challenge facing us, so that transfer should be funded and placed in a position where to be able to fulfill that fundamental mandate of new capacity. If we don't do that, we're going to have a problem. So, Chair, I think that I want in 3 years' time, we don't have the same. I don't want to be like other people who say, this vindicates my point, because I don't think that's how I want to work. But I think that it's something that we want to raise, which we should think that has become quite critical for our country. So, our ability to finance future capacity expansion will be compromised with a weak financial position of the company. Secondly, of course, it means that if we've got our liquidity position is not good, it means we're not able to meet some of our current commitments and obligations. So we start operating with the rock power to pay someone, with delay paying other people. The same system that I think that happened was a simple system that does not protect the change, according to the CEO. We do almost the same thing. When the current situation doesn't allow, we look at other people and say, who can we pay in the next 30 days? Who can we pay in the next 6 months? So that's what happens when your cash position is to do that. So we are introducing a cash management program to manage some of the issues. Chair, from 2011-2012, we are no longer in a position. We have depleted the reserve to a point where if we are given additional obligations, we will not be able to fund those obligations from 2011-2012. So this effectively will be the last year that we can spend probably the reserve to fund any unfunded mandate. But if we are given an additional mandate that is not funded, if social media mandate is not funded in 2011-2012, I'd be left with no option but to go to the Minister of Transport and say, we can't run such a long distance. And we know that what happens at Park Station, people are going to East London, who are going to Mutina, who are going to Komatipua. We know what happens during the December peak period. There are many people on a daily basis who travel between Johannesburg, Cape Town, Johannesburg, East London, Johannesburg, Mutina, Johannesburg, Komatipua, Johannesburg, Durban on long distance trains. But if it's not funded, they're not going to run it here. I think that we don't have the capacity anymore to absorb the 558 million shortfall or billion on shortfall on the real side of things. And finally, of course, say that if you don't have enough funds, your position is weak. It means you can't bring operational improvement, such as trying to run your train on time, improving on maintenance through the preventative maintenance program. You don't have money for facility management, which is basically the cleaning of toilets, stations, changing of roads, fences, and all of those issues. So that financial position is very important for us to be able to deliver on the mandate. We, of course, are not complaining. I think as management, we've done a lot of things in the last financial year to try and manage the financial position. We implemented a cost containment plan, and I think that we've done quite a lot of savings under that program. We've reduced the number of coaches that we can refurbish. Our plan was to refurbish about 700, but we pushed down the number to about 526 to make sure that we remain within that budget. We renegotiated key contracts, and I think this is one of the most difficult things. We renegotiated key contracts, some of them in railways run back to many years. You create a lot of enemies. Some of the fights that you're having with the public sector, with Transnet, with the union carriage, has to do with the fact that we have to renegotiate the price. We have to renegotiate those contracts and say that we are no longer prepared to pay 6.8 million rand to refurbish a coach. We'll only pay 5 million rand. And of course, powerful organizations can do that. They put it in the newspaper today, they tell you that they don't want to pay, they personalize attacks in newspapers, they get their friends to write letters to the newspaper, people they have prizes on Fridays to attack you as being incompetent. They do all sorts of things. But we can't be intimidated. We have to renegotiate the contract. there is no reason why we should pay 6.8 million rand to refurbish a coach, when in China you can buy a new coach for almost just over 7 million rand. So those are things that we have to address. And by doing that, of course, there are people who have historically the same fight that ref is having with other professions, we are having our own fight with people who have been feeding on radio. And when you change prices, you change the way things are done. They just are not happy with that kind of arrangement. As I said, we've introduced price caps. We've delayed implementation of some of the key infrastructure projects. We've increased, of course, marginally for the first time in 7 years, we introduced a 10% increase this year for the first of April. We strengthened cash management, and of course, we went to strengthen the internal control and financial management within the business. So even though the problem is bigger, but management has tried to address some of the issues that are there. In line with what I've just been saying here about the financial position, of course, the board approved a new strategy 2 months ago, and that strategy seeks to position Zwakwa to be the provider of public transport services in high volume corridors. And I'll be very quick to indicate some of the corridors here. On the metro side, we talk about corridors, Naledi to Johannesburg, Pretoria, Olifant, Johannesburg, Mamelodi, Pretoria, Mabopane, Pretoria, KwaMashu, Durban, Umlazi, Khayelitsha, Philippi, Cape Town, Kraaifontein, Bayville, Cape Town, Simonstown, Cape Town. Those are the key corridors on the metro side where we are focusing on investment to ensure that we get the improvement. On the long distance side, it's Johannesburg, Cape Town, Johannesburg, Queen's Transit, London, Johannesburg, Nelspruit, Komatipoort, and Johannesburg, Polokwane, Mthina. And of course, we've got a number of growth corridors we want to put in capacity on the Mabopane line, Motherwell in Port Elizabeth, Green Group in Osport in Pretoria, and the Barra link in Nazareth to Barragwana Hospital in the next 5 years. Now, the most immediate issues, of course, for us, challenge for us, the business, as I said, is to strengthen our financial position. Now, what we have agreed to do is that in the next 12 to 18 months, we need to embark on an asset restructuring program. I think that's what we are doing now. We are trying to get the strategic equity partner for Intersight to be able to generate the much needed cash in the business, because we are not sure whether we'll get all of that cash from government. We have embarked on a balancing restructuring exercise so that we can get assets, we can get value out of our own huge asset base. And of course, we are running now our property management, our property portfolio, not to be managed outside, but to be managed internally in the division. So I think that's what we are doing. And here I've got, of course, in the presentation, which will be circulated, a number of programs that we're going to have, and that, let me just summarize by indicating what are the key things that we want to do. On the asset investment side, we've got two important programs. The new rolling stock program, which I think I can emphasize, for us to buy over 8,000 commuter trains, coaches, over a period of 18 years. I think that is one issue. And I know that government takes that program seriously. And of course, we've got the National Signaling Upgrade Program. We will make an announcement here next week to appoint the prepared leader who's going to introduce the new technology for the signaling from January next year. We've got a number of network extension projects. I won't mention that. I think projects such as the Green City Development in KZN, the Amantra Rail Service introduction, the Mabopane Capacity Enhancement, the North-South Corridor in Durban, and I think these are some of the projects that are there. Finally, Chair, in conclusion, we need our funding requirement for the next 3 to 5 years. We need a capital investment program. I think that we need 100 billion rand for that. And of course, we need an additional 1 billion rand government subsidy for rail operations. But let me emphasize here, we are not asking for a subsidy for buses or software. We are not asking for a subsidy for property. We are only asking for an additional funding for rail operations, that is metro rail and social development. Additional revenue, we are going to draw them from rental income, fair revenue, advertising, and leasing of some of the assets like train. So we've got trains such as what is it called? The trains that move tourists, people coming from abroad traveling on Atlantic rail and everything. They travel on our network and they pay up the fee to do that. So in addition to the subsidies, so we are not saying that we don't want the subsidy. Public transport, I hope, will remain subsidized moving forward. So these are just additional revenue stream that we think it is that. So that is our annual report, and that is our strategy moving forward to ensure that we deliver on the mandate that we've been given. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we now please go on? I think I should remind the president of transport industry that we are not allowed to be until we have been looking under the I got an SMS from one of the Yes, in the program, we have an item that we can send the report for after the farm items are on for cover. I don't understand what I mean. We understand the word here, the contamination, why, and we mean it. No, here is constitution. You are going to report today because we have to approve the annual report for Parliament before the end of November. And we have to do two things. We have to prepare a budget review report. This actually asks all the deputies that are asking for money. We will only be able to do that motivation by engaging with you. So if you present a list, not allow us to engage with you. Don't try when you are not able to put a motivation for the capital. That is the result of not wanting to engage with us and report to the person that will be asking. One thing that should be very, very clear is that we motivate every portfolio committee for a budget system of the department and the entity. So we are not just engaging in this exercise for accountability purposes. We are also engaging for us to understand why you need more money and why you should be motivating that you get more money in order for you to carry out your money. Yes. So can we get up? Oh, I'm with the motion later. I don't want to go out. Thank you.